I was told to look into Dr. David Miano from World of Antiquity, and he's got a PhD after his name. And I never worked with nobody with a PhD after their name, so I looked into what that means, and apparently, even though it's out of order, it means Doctor of Philosophy. And look, man, just because we're going to talk about Plato's Atlantis doesn't mean that, like, you need a degree in philosophy. I thought we were talking about archaeology for the most part here. Ooh, look at me, Tao Te Ching, Art of War, Plato invented the plate, blah, blah, blah. But no, after looking into it a little bit more, I've determined that PhD probably stands for pretty hard to debunk. Well, hello and welcome back to the next episode of Dedunking. Yes, we're going after Dr. David Miano from World of Antiquity and his video on Graham Hancock and flood myths. Now, I've watched a few of his videos over the years, and this is the first time I've really looked at any of his debunking stuff, and I was not impressed. I was very impressed with his video on the geology behind the Sphinx. He's very even-headed about it, pointed out that there's different hypotheses, different findings along the way. This is what he believes, but it's not necessarily the consensus. Very scientific. Compare that to what you're going to get in this video. It's not scientific at all. He's just like, gotcha, Graham. And you're going to see some of the things that I've explained in the past. If you watch my video on archaeological bias, you will see a lot of the kind of things that I mentioned there. In particular, we were in the early days of the three sciences that involved digging in the dirt, really. The paleontology, archaeology, and anthropology. And there's other ones, but those are the three that I'm going to talk about here. Those three found themselves immediately fighting against creationist types, Noah's Ark. I mean, hell, look at Ken Ham today. You can still find the creationist museums. And this is a battleground that they've had since day one of these sciences. And as a result, they've gotten to the point where there's a pretty big knee-jerk reaction to things like Noah's Flood, which they're going to call any talk about a global cataclysm, Noah's Flood. That's like their knee-jerk to it. Man, that guy is smart, sexy, and well-groomed. Just can't fucking beat that, can you? And when I was looking at some of the doctor's other videos, I noticed this in his video on pseudo-archaeology.
I do not agree with someone judging something to be pseudo-archaeology before looking into the matter. However, there are certain claims being made out there that have been shown to be based on pseudo-archaeology. And so, when those claims get repeated, I don't think it's necessary for someone to reinvestigate the whole matter again just to make sure it is still pseudo-archaeology. If it walks like a duck, I hope that makes sense.
So you can kind of see how this is going to go. One of the things you'll notice that scientists do a lot when they're dealing with pseudoscientists or people that they have no respect for their position on, they don't hedge their bets like they do when he's talking about the Sphinx. And he's like, well, maybe it could be. No, no, no. Everything's set in stone. We know everything. Fuck you. You're wrong.
Now, although the meltdown did take place over 10,000 years, there were within it three or four major episodes of flooding when you could, in some cases, get as much as a 30-foot rise in sea level pretty much overnight.
These major episodes he's talking about are called meltwater pulses. They refer to periods of time when ice was melting at a more rapid rate than normal. Meltwater Pulse 1A occurred around 14,600 years ago, when the sea level rose between 16 and 25 meters. But this was over several centuries. The rate of sea level rise was 40 to 60 millimeters per year. Meltwater Pulse 1B occurred beginning around 11,500 years ago, during which the sea rose 28 meters over 500 years, approximately 40 millimeters per year, though more recent studies suggest it was about half that. It is clear that Hancock's claim of 30 feet overnight is unsupported by evidence.
Now, what's funny here is that they're both basically doing the exact same thing. Hancock is holding up the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis as fact, and the good doctor here is rejecting it as fact, when the reality of it is it is a highly contested, hotly contested, tons of articles being published every year about it, back and forth. It is extremely, extremely contested turf. I'll give you a quick example of some of the data. If you go to Barbados, for example, is the place that they like to go to measure sea level rise because it doesn't sink nearly as much when there's a bunch of glaciers on the land, so hopefully it doesn't rise as much when the glaciers melt off. That's the idea. There's also a shitload of coral there, so they can get an idea, because coral's long-lasting, they can measure up the sea level rise over a very long period of time, so they can say, okay, it's only been a couple centimeters a year. On the other hand, the North Atlantic deep water was really messed up a long time ago, around 12,000 years ago. It was really messed up in its production, which would not happen from a couple centimeters of water added a year. It would have taken a lot of water dumped into the ocean to do that. There's a lot of data points like this being thrown back and forth. There's the iridium and the magnetic spherules and other markers for a celestial thing smacking into the ground, and then there's the other people that say, oh, you know, that stuff, we were finding that everywhere. There's people that say they don't even find it. It's all over the place right now. So for either one of these men to just say, oh, you know, this is how it is wrong. So what we have here at its core is what they would call gradualism versus catastrophism. Gradualism is the idea that slow changes over time is what makes the Earth the way it is. Catastrophism is the idea that things change dramatically and hardcore, and that's what makes the Earth the way it is. And for some stupid reason, up until 1980-something, the two groups, there was no way, couldn't possibly be both. We couldn't have slow water erosion and comets hitting the Earth. No. It wasn't until they accepted the KT impact hypothesis for killing off all the dinosaurs that catastrophism was once again considered scientifically valid. When I was a kid, if you got a 10-year-old out-of-date textbook, it was going to talk shit about the guys that in the old days were catastrophists. Oh, those guys weren't even doing science right. And nowadays, that's looked down as bad. So one side of this is attached to creationism, the catastrophism. The other side's not. So it's kind of funny that still today, even though neither side would say it has anything to do with that, we still have that going on. It's kind of funny.
Now you have to consider what a 30-foot overnight rise in sea level would do to our civilization today, if it were to happen. I'm sure we've all seen the horrific and troubling images of the tsunami in Japan. And we can see the catastrophe that is unleashed by nature just by a temporary rise in sea level. So we have to imagine something like that, but on a global scale and permanent, and consider what it did to our ancestors and what effects it may have had upon them.
Note how he is assuming not only that there was a 30-foot rise in sea level overnight, but that it was like a tsunami. While a slow sea level rise would have been global, tsunamis are not a global phenomenon, and they are not permanent. After a tsunami, the sea level returns to where it was. So his comments here are misleading.
Now, Dr. Miano knows that we're talking about the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis here. He knows that's what Hancock's talking about. But even if he rejects it out of hand by not bringing it up, he makes it sound like Hancock's just spitballing bullshit out there when, if he's talking about a meteor smacking into the freaking glaciers up in the North Pole, well, yeah, you're probably going to have some pretty big tsunamis that raise the sea level that don't subside. Again, catastrophism versus that gradualism. But, Dr. Miano, I have to ask you a question. You know, I used to have a magic card back in the 90s, and in the text box it said, like, if you look too long into the abyss looks into you, or I saw an episode of Doctor Who that said something about, like, if you fight monsters, that you become the monster that you fight if you're not careful. I don't know the quotes exactly, because I don't have a PhD in that fancy philosophy thing, but you do, so you probably would know the exact quotes.
I don't believe it's an accident that there are more than 2,000 flood myths pretty much all around the world. Memories of a gigantic global flood that almost wiped out mankind.
When he speaks of 2,000 flood myths, he can only be referring to every single version out there, which includes versions of the same flood myth, such as every time an ancient writer repeats the Greek story of the flood of Deucalion, or repeats the Mesopotamian flood story. There are not 2,000 different flood myths. I think that's worth clarifying. And flood myths are not from every part of the world. And the number that speak of a worldwide flood are limited. So his statement that more than 2,000 flood myths remember a gigantic global flood is misleading.
Yeah, 2,000 does seem like a little bit of a ridiculously high number. But even if you say that there's 50, there's 15 flood myths that are saying some very similar things, and they're showing up in Mesopotamia and in Easter Island and in Australia and in South America and in North America. And then at that point, you would have to say that's something to be worth looking at. And see, that's the thing, is that it's like, there's this pendulum thing going on with this discussion between these two, with this response video. Our good doctor here is all the way to the other side. Hancock is like, we got 2,000 flood myths. And he's like, actually, you got none.
Most archaeologists and historians are not very impressed with flood myths. And they take the view that these were little local events, perhaps a river flooded its banks, little local events which were then elaborated out by our superstitious ancestors who imagined it was a global flood. But I find that a completely unnecessary explanation, since we know that there was gigantic global flooding during the 10,000 years at the end of the Ice Age. And it seems to me highly probable that the world's legacy of flood myths are a memory of what happened at the end of the Ice Age.
Considering that major floods happen all the time, we see them in the news, we have records of them happening all over the world going back for as long as our records last, what do you think are the chances that every ancient flood story, or even that a majority of them, no matter where we are in the world, refers to the same flood? Mr. Hancock says that embellishment is an unnecessary explanation, implying that it goes too far. He proposes instead that all these flood stories are likely a memory of a single flood at the end of the Ice Age. It's almost as if he thinks his explanation is less far-fetched, but an extreme coincidence of that sort is not more believable than saying humans are just acting human.
You would have to be so New Age lost in it, with crystals coming out your butthole and ayahuasca bleeding out your pores, in order for you to actually think that what Hancock is saying there is that every single flood myth is related to this great flood. I mean, nobody in their right mind would say that. Now, he definitely words things in a crappy way, but you have to understand that there's no way he's saying that every single flood myth. He says a legacy of flood myths. The fact that people pass on this idea of this global cataclysm that wiped out a bunch of stuff, that is something he's talking about. You're fully aware of this, Doc. Where is the intellectual honesty here, man? I mean, I know that you think that this guy's just an idiot and that nothing he's saying is worth addressing, but this is just farming it for views without ever touching a person like me. You're never going to reach somebody like me doing it like this.
One of those flood myths was preserved by Plato. And that's the myth of Atlantis.
For context and to refresh our memories, let's take a look at the account of the destruction of Atlantis. Okay, so here, Plato's character, Critias, is telling the story. And after describing a battle in which the Athenians defeat the Atlanteans, he says, quote, "But afterwards there occurred violent earthquakes and floods. And in a single day and night of misfortune, all your warlike men," that's the Athenian army, "in a body, sank into the earth, and the island of Atlantis, in like manner, disappeared in the depths of the sea. For which reason, the sea in those parts is impassable and impenetrable, because there is a shoal of mud in the way, and this was caused by the subsidence of the island. The Athenian army sinks into the earth, presumably in an earthquake, and the island of Atlantis sinks into the sea. The island is said to subside. What that means is that it was the island that moved, not the sea. This is not a rising of the sea level, but a sinking of Atlantis. It doesn't fit very well with Hancock's perception of a flood caused by tsunamis or rising waters."
So wait a minute here. Are you trying to tell me that you're are you trying to tell me that your evidence that Hancock is wrong there is that they said that the island sunk instead of the water went over the top of the island? So, like, if I get in the bathtub and I say that the water rises over my legs, is that wrong? Even though I'm subsiding into the bathtub? Jeez Louise, man, what are we talking about here? This is like, 2 points for you, right? Good job, man. You totally got him there.
He said he got it through his family line from the Greek lawmaker Solon, who had visited Egypt and had been told in Egypt of the existence of a high civilization in deep antiquity that had been destroyed in a global flood accompanied by tremendous earthquakes and volcanic activities.
And the story of Atlantis is never said to be global in Plato's writings. And it cannot possibly be a global flood, because Critias speaks of the city of Athens and the Egyptians as existing both before and after the destruction. It's just Atlantis that gets destroyed without a trace. So both of these statements by Hancock are factually incorrect. But here's the interesting thing. Plato refers to other flood legends. In Greek legend, it is the flood of Deucalion, which is said to have been worldwide. It was the big one. So a question arises. In Plato's writings, is the flood of Deucalion the same flood that destroyed Atlantis? Let's take a look at how Critias introduces the Atlantis story. He quotes the Egyptians as saying to Solon, "In the first place, you remember a single deluge only," referring to Deucalion's flood, "but there were many previous ones. In the next place, you do not know that there formerly dwelt in your land the fairest and noblest race of men which ever lived, and that you and your whole city are descended from a small seed or remnant of them which survived Deucalion's flood. And this was unknown to you, because for many generations, the survivors of that destruction died, leaving no written word." So, he is saying here that prior to the great deluge, Athens was inhabited by a noble race of men, and they fought with Atlantis. But the fact that he tells Solon that there were many deluges before the great one, and then relates the Atlantis tale, suggests that the flood that destroyed Atlantis is one that happened before the great one. In other words, he's giving Solon a story of an earlier deluge. This earlier deluge was not worldwide, as is evidenced by the survival not only of Athens, even if battered, but also the Egyptians themselves. It is not the flood of Deucalion.
In Genesis, in the Bible, we have two accounts of creation of man. One he's made before the animals, the other one he's made after the animals. The scholarly consensus is two myths were joined together, and just like if they take a bunch of source maps and make a map, sometimes they would make two or three of the same island. Same thing happened here. We have two accounts of creation of man that just got kind of stuck next to each other. There's no way you're not aware of this, Doctor. There is no way you don't know this. So to treat this like this flood is separate from this flood is separate from this flood, when we're talking about, if Hancock's hypothesis is to be entertained, we're talking about 12,000 years of verbal tradition. Or at that point, you know, 8,000 or whatever. A long-ass time. Plenty long enough for it to get twisted up. And as a matter of fact, you're going to start telling us soon about how myths get twisted up in this regards, right? But you're going to pretend that these ones should be treated almost like historical accounts. This myth is separate from this myth is separate from this myth. These different floods are all entirely different. Even though this one talks about destroying cities and this one does too, they're not the same, because this is only one city and it has Egypt still standing and this one doesn't. Impossible for those two to have possibly came from the same source and then go in different directions and come back and what? Nope.
And this civilization, Plato said, was globally distributed, although focused on an island which he appeared to locate in the Atlantic.
So I went and double-checked this, suspecting this to be inaccurate, and it turns out that nowhere in Plato does it say that the civilization of Atlantis was globally distributed. Instead, Critias says that it had rule over the whole island and several others, and over parts of the continent of Atlantis. And furthermore, the men of Atlantis had subjected the parts of Libya within the columns of Heracles as far as Egypt, and of Europe as far as Tyrrhenia, western Italy. That's not anywhere near global, so we have to classify this claim as factually incorrect.
Wow, they didn't use the word global, even though Hancock did? Are you trying to tell me that the civilization with maps like this wouldn't have used the word globe? They have three continents on it, man. How many continents was they said to have, Atlantis said to have had people on? Africa and... Oh, the other continent, is that a doubled thing? Is that Atlantis is an island and Atlantis is a continent, and in one case they control the whole island, and in the other case they control part of the thing because it's a continent? Isn't that weird? Wow, it's almost like things get doubled like that. Weird. And then it says diverse islands, and all this is supposed to be outside the Straits of Gibraltar besides the continent and the other two, Italy and Africa. No, not global, but look where we're at on the map now. Again, it feels like you're being really, really, really scrutinous with these things and treating these mythological accounts even with more legitimacy than Hancock does, which that's saying something, man.
It was utterly, utterly obliterated. And that mankind was forced to begin again like children with no memory of what went before, that we were indeed a species with amnesia.
He seems to be referring to a conversation that Plato composed for his book The Laws between Clinias and an unnamed Athenian. But in this dialogue, the deluge they refer to is the Great Deluge, and therefore the Flood of Deucalion. Hancock again incorrectly connects it with Atlantis.
And he continues to treat the myth as a historical account, and this is this, and this is this, and this is this, and there's no room for error, and nothing got twisted together after thousands of years. Even though we're about to see him go right down that road here in just a second and start telling us everything's twisted up, and all these myths were just tangled up from different myths put together, and it's like, dude, this one's a perfect myth and is unassailable. This one's a twisted up ball of crap. What's the difference? Which side does it support? Who am I pretending to be? I don't know, Hancock or Dr. Miano, you pick.
The flood myth is found in India, where we have the Indian Noah figure, Manu, who is preserved by the god Vishnu to repopulate the planet, much in the way that that Noah does in our Western flood story.
There are similarities between the Indian flood legend and the ones found in the Near East, including the biblical account. The earliest Indian version appears in a late Vedic text called the Shatapatha Brahmana, which dates to the 7th or 6th century BCE. It's also found in the Mahabharata and the Matsya Purana. The similarities with the Near Eastern versions include the building of a ship by the protagonist, the bringing on board of animals and or seeds of life, the landing on a high mountain, and the performing of a sacrifice at the end. Also that the flood was worldwide. Modern scholars generally agree that there is some borrowing going on, either from Mesopotamia to India or vice versa. But we should note that there is no similarity between the Indian flood legend and the legend of Atlantis.
Wow! So myths can get tangled together when two different cultures come into contact, and then like similar myths can take on different things, and like details can get obfuscated and stirred up, and it can be kind of difficult to tell, especially after a really, really, really long time. So, And that Deucalion versus the Atlantis thing, you're going to tell me which one of those floods is like, this one, and this one's that one? Dude. The disconnect with those being just a few minutes apart in the video is staggering to me.
And in Greece, it's the story of Deucalion and Pyrrha, who ride out the flood in a huge box. And again, their role is to repopulate the earth and to reestablish civilization.
What is interesting about the flood legend of Deucalion and his wife Pyrrha is that in the earliest extant versions, such as we find in Plato, it is said that Deucalion and Pyrrha survived a destructive deluge, but there's no mention of it being a worldwide flood or of them building a boat or a chest to survive it, bringing animals on board and landing on a mountain, until Roman times. Those features were put into the story later, after the Bible had been translated into Greek and the story of Noah was well known to the Greeks. So that raises the possibility that the Greco-Roman legend was influenced by the biblical account in later times. In other words, the Deucalion legend in its later forms, cannot be said to be a wholly independent tradition.
Really? It's not? Oh man, it's a good thing nobody's like coming along and using it as like hard evidence to try to prove other people wrong or something. That would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? God, I'd hate to be the person that was going, come on, man. You're telling us yourself that the myth is corrupted. Of course it is. It's a myth. It's been passed around and tied up. So how you keep on harping, like you keep swinging that hammer of these two different floods, and I'm going to keep pointing out that that is just silly.
Similar stories have come down from the ancient Maya, who spoke of cyclical destructions and rebirths of the earth, and indeed the Aztec civilization as well.
We have a similar phenomenon going on with the Maya flood myths as we have with Greece. All of our extant accounts of Maya flood myths come from a time after Christian missionaries began their work in Mesoamerica, teaching the Maya the Bible. In fact, a number of the Maya flood stories have clear biblical references in them. It is probably true that there were earlier versions of Maya flood myths that preceded the ones we currently know about, but their similarity to the biblical account then would have been minimal, the main story simply being that the gods destroyed people in a flood during the time of creation. That's about it. This image, which Hancock displays in his presentation, is supposed to be of an ancient Maya stone frieze. It's not a photo, but a drawing in a modern Maya revival art style, not seen on ancient Maya monuments. It first appeared in a book on Atlantis by Robert Stacy Judd, who was himself an illustrator. Not only has the frieze never been seen by anyone, but this picture of it is the only one in existence. It's safe to conclude it came from Stacy Judd's imagination.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty embarrassing for Hancock to be bringing out something like that, isn't it? But we do have the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpents that pretty much shows that, even though Hans Gruber's the guy that points it out with Hancock. It pretty much shows the Quetzalcoatl myth. And in all honesty, there's not a lot of that that's similar to the Noah's Ark story. Noah's Ark isn't a civilizer story, it's a flood survival story and the sacrificing thing, right? The Quetzalcoatl story, the Viracocha story, he like civilizes and teaches people and like, you know, that kind of thing, which is a huge part of Hancock's hypothesis. So again, it's kind of silly that you're ignoring these things, because I'm sure you're completely aware of them. So not only are you going to ignore the myths being tangled together again, which would completely undermine your point about the Greek floods, but in this case, you're going to completely disregard the myths, even though the things that are the most tantalizing, the things that are the most comparable to the old world and the new, aren't in Noah's flood. They're not in the Noah's Ark story in the Bible. So the Spanish wouldn't have been teaching these guys about, say, the Egyptian flood myth, because to them, it was just as bad as the South American flood myth. Burn all those books. That was their ideas, right?
And of course, we all know the Noah story from the Bible. Now, it's well accepted by scholars that the Noah story is simply a later recension of an earlier story that came from Sumer, from Mesopotamia, the land that we now call Iraq. And that story is the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Scholars are of the opinion not that the biblical version drew directly from the Epic of Gilgamesh, but that both go back to an earlier source. All of the stories about a great deluge in the Near East share common features. But while three specific regions of the world, namely the Near East, South Asia, and Classical Greece, which neighbored each other, have flood stories that share a unique set of features, it would be incorrect to say, as it is often said, that all flood stories of the world are similar or have much in common. Sometimes in these stories, the deluge is described simply as a first stage in the creation of the world. Sometimes a god sends a flood in order to destroy the first race of humans, or to punish some animal for its misbehavior. Or the flood may be sent without any reason at all. And humans try to save their lives in different ways, climbing up mountains or trees, floating on the water in a hollow pumpkin or in a wooden box. There are plenty of versions and combinations of various motifs and themes, many of these natural products of the human psyche. And it seems quite clear that the reason why the Near East, India, and Greece share similar flood stories is because of influence between them, that is, oral or literary influence. Stories were passed between the peoples in the area. They cannot be said to be independent witnesses to a specific event, which is what Mr. Hancock is suggesting they are.
You know, that would be pretty compelling if you took that position on other things, like the Sea Peoples, for example. But you won't. You'll say that the Sea Peoples almost certainly existed, but you know what? Well, what do we got? We got a bunch of people that all shared the same region, so the stories could have been passed back and forth. Maybe some dude cooked that up by the campfire. Can you show me a button? Can you show me a boat? Can you show me a helmet? Oh, you just got books, huh? Oh, you think you might have some DNA. Maybe? Okay, well, that's nice. This is what I mean by there's a little bit of this archaeological bias thing going on here. Now, obviously, the Sea People's reports are a whole lot closer to us in time than anything from like 10,000 years ago would be. But the thing is that the Sea Peoples are assumed to exist based on basically word of mouth of a small group of people when you really think about it. These people all traded with each other. They all talked to each other. They traded flood myths, according to him, right? So why not the Sea People myths? Why not the Sea Peoples are myths? So I picked on him some throughout the whole video, but honestly, Dr. Miano is ignoring data that he should know about, and he's like portraying that we know these things to be true when we don't know these things to be true. And I'm not playing God of the Gaps here. I'm saying that he's doing the same thing as Graham Hancock. If it looks like a duck, quit quacking like a duck, Doc. All right, thank you guys very much. Don't forget to like and subscribe and do all those fancy YouTube things. Share with your friends. Tell your mom what a great, crazy guy you think I might be. Have a good evening. We'll see you next time.
The word pseudoarchaeology has nothing to do with whether a theory is correct. It's not the what that matters. It's the how. And so, measuring an object poorly or incompletely, failing to take into account all the evidence on the subject, and drawing far-reaching conclusions from it, is pseudoarchaeology.
Failing to take into account all the evidence on the subject.